On 666 ABC Canberra, I'm Kim Lester, filling in for Adam Shirley this afternoon. It's around about 10 degrees in town at the moment. And we're talking in the midweek mixtape about songs, about pictures and photos. Just before the news headlines, I played Photographs and Memories by Jim Croce. I've also got a request for Picture This by Blondie, which I will play very soon on 666 ABC Canberra. But in a moment, how close is the relationship between musical excellence and drugs? There's a new book out that explores that.
Kim Lester on 666 ABC Canberra.
Kurt Cobain, Amy Winehouse, The Beatles, all great musicians, all acknowledged drug users. So is a relationship with drugs necessary to creative success? Does success lead to drug use? Or are there sober musicians out there who would beg to differ? Journalist Andrew McMillan has confronted that chicken and egg question in his new book, Talking Smack, Honest Conversations About Drugs. Andrew joins me today, along with his brother Stuart McMillan, the book's cartoonist. Andrew, first of all, what music do you like listening to?
I am a lifelong music fan. For the last 5 years, I've been a music journalist, but my personal tastes are quite broad. I love rock, pop, hip-hop, metal, acoustic, electronic, almost any genre you can name. I'm not too fond of country, but don't hold that against me.
Has a lot of the music that you listen to, the musicians that are performing, been influenced by drugs?
Potentially. It depends whether the individual is happy to discuss their use, and it's something that we find that it's rare to hear people in any aspect of society, let alone creative musicians, talking frankly about their drug use. I feel it's something that is stigmatized and demonized by much of society because, let's face it, taking drugs, most drugs, is illegal, aside from alcohol and nicotine and prescription medication and caffeine, which I just consumed before this interview, actually. Whereas everything, quote-unquote, harder than alcohol is frowned upon because it's so rare to hear people talk frankly and honestly about having positive experiences with these drugs. It's easy to forget that people take these things because they want to feel good, and by only focusing on the negatives, I think we miss much of the important things to discuss around drug use in this country.
Interestingly, though, with music and probably a lot of other creative outlets, we kind of celebrate the and we really consume the product of drugs. A lot of us say the Beatles were at their best when they were consistently getting high. Do you find that musicians feel that the musicians that you spoke to get that same negative reaction to their drug use?
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, I'll use the example of Paul Kelly, who I spoke to for the book, and he said for around 2 decades he was a recreational heroin user, and that's quite a confronting thing for people who hear his great pop songs on FM radio to hear. Like, we barely associate heroin with recreational drug use. And the fact that people choose to take these things and put them in their bodies, and maybe that usage of certain drugs allows them to unlock some next level of creativity that was previously unable to achieve, that's quite difficult to understand for people who avoid illicit drugs for various reasons. And up until recently, I was one of those people too, I should point out.
Does it make Paul Kelly a success story when it comes to music and drugs?
It could be viewed that way, in that he used a drug like heroin successfully, in that he did not fall victim to addiction, as we tend to believe that so many heroin users do. But whether or not that's actually the truth is something that's hard to determine, because most illicit drugs, and certainly heroin is the most egregious example of a drug where the shame and stigma around taking it is so great that those who choose to use the drug are doing it in shadows, in isolation, away from the public eye. It's not something that people feel they can share publicly because it's so demonized and viewed as this terrible drug, whereas it's easy to forget that people like Paul Kelly, for example, took heroin because of its benefits. For him, it was a way to a treat after hard work, after completing an album or a tour. And that's something that I think is missing from the national dialogue around drug use, that people use these things because they want to feel good, regardless of the legality or otherwise of these substances.
Which of the 14 musicians that you interviewed for the book talked about how drug use enhanced their creativity? Were there any specific examples?
Yeah, Steve Kilby from The Church, one of our great rock bands, he started using heroin in his late 30s, and the first album that the Church released after he had discovered heroin is widely regarded as one of their best albums. And in that album, which is called Priest Equals Aura, was released in 1992, Kilby talked about how, with the music, he was aiming to mimic the effects of opiates through the sound itself. So he wanted to consume the drug and try to, shall we say, intoxicate the listener, I suppose, by helping them to feel what he was feeling with this new drug that he was experimenting with. But as he points out in that chapter in the book, that was the honeymoon period. The Church nailed the heroin sound, as it were, with Priest Equals Aura, and from that point on it was a bit of a slow degradation for the next few albums, which were less successful as heroin, I suppose, overtook Kilby's life and priorities.
And it really overtook his life, didn't it? Contrary to Paul Kelly's recreational use, Steve Kilby was an addict.
That's right. For 11 years, he was a heroin addict, and he eventually weaned himself off it using methadone. And the way he described it to me was that he didn't quit heroin, heroin quit him. Because after weaning himself off with methadone, somewhere down the track, he tried snorting heroin again, and he had a terrible reaction. He felt nauseous and anxious, and he had never had that reaction before. Usually it was a very positive experience. So, yeah, that's the way he described it. He didn't quit heroin, it quit him.
Now, contrary to that, Gautier is also one of the people you interview in your book. He has no real relationship with drugs.
That's right. One of our most successful pop stars of all time is sober, has been his whole life, and despite his curiosity, as he told me, he is the kind of person who is very controlled and measured in his work and his life, but he's also open to spontaneity. So, as he said to me, he's the kind of person who might wake up on his 35th birthday and say, you know what, let's try heroin today. Today is the day for it. That's probably a humorous aside from Wally, I should say. He had a very early experience with cannabis around the age of 10 or 11. He saw a friend of his starting to abuse cannabis at a young age, and he shied away from it. As he put it, in his teens, when he would go to parties and his friends would be getting pissed and smoking pot, he was more interested in trying to find a nice girl to have a conversation with. So you can see where his priorities lay at the time and still lie.
I find him a really interesting example, because if you listen to a lot of his music, his level of creativity is really varied. So you can listen to five different songs on Making Mirrors and think that they come from almost five different performers. So obviously drugs haven't helped him to kind of open his mind to other levels of creativity. He hasn't needed that.
That's right. Wally told me he doesn't feel a lack in his life. As he put it, he is completely happy and fulfilled with living life sober and, you know, taking a ride down to the beach and enjoying the weather and, you know, listening to great music and viewing great art. Like, he doesn't feel the need to try and enhance those experiences by taking drugs which affect your mood and behavior and mind. And I think that's a fantastic outlook to have, and certainly a valid one in this conversation, because, you know, as a rock musician who has been around, you know, plenty of dimly lit backstage areas at late night hours, you can imagine how many times a guy like Wally has been offered drugs, and yet he's decided to say no. And as I said, he's one of the most successful pop stars of all time. So I think it's a great message that you can say no and be fantastically creative and successful.
On 666 ABC Canberra, I'm Kim Lester, filling in for Adam Shirley today. I'm joined by Andrew McMillan, who has written the book Talking Smack, which looks at the relationships that some Australian musicians have with drugs. Also with me is his brother Stuart, who has contributed to the book in a small way. Stuart, just explain to me your contribution to the book.
Yeah, so Kim, I'm a cartoonist, and I specialise in non-fiction comics about social and scientific issues, and I got really interested in learning about the history of alcohol prohibition, particularly the American experience with alcohol prohibition in the 1920s. It's very interesting to see what happened to the quality, to the entire alcohol-consuming environment. So, for example, because there was no government regulations controlling the sale of alcohol anymore, there was no quality control, so people were having massive health problems from consuming unregulated alcohol. There was all this violence because it was black market operators like the mafia who were selling alcohol to the public. And that whole situation really reminded me, it really had parallels with the way the drug market works today, where essentially the government has said that all drugs are illegal. That hasn't extinguished Australians' appetite to take drugs, because we know that on the statistics, 9 million Australians have taken illegal drugs in their lifetime, which is 40% of the Australian population. So in other words, if people want to take drugs these days, they really roll the dice and take their chances with the black market. Mm. And it's really interesting to see some of the parallels between alcohol prohibition and drug prohibition.
Andrew McMillan, Stuart McMillan, thank you both so much for your time. The book is Talking Smack, which looks at an honest conversations about drugs in the music industry.
Kim Lester on 666 ABC Canberra.
And in the midweek mixtape today, we're talking about songs about pictures and photos. So if you'd like to request a song, you can give me a call on 1300 681 666.
In the August issue of Gardening Australia magazine, get a head start on your spring crops. Create an enchanting woodland effect in your garden using hellebores. Pets in the garden? Designer space your furry friends can't destroy. Grow your own sweet potatoes, plus there's a complete guide to composting. Gardening Australia magazine. August issue available now from ABC shops, centres, shop online and good news agents.
Every time I hear that Gardening Australia promo, I just feel a little bit guilty. I'm just not getting out into the garden enough, as much as I should be this winter. On 666 ABC Canberra, I'm Kim Lester, filling in for Adam Shirley. And speaking of our midweek mixtape, I got an SMS from Stuart, who we actually just interviewed along with Andrew McMillan about the book Talking Smack. And Stuart texted, "How about pictures of you by The Cure?" which comes from Stuart the cartoonist. Yeah, I'm going to try and track that one down. That sounds like a good request. Before I get that one, though, Jim also called a little bit earlier and asked for this one by Blondie.